Welcome to Influential Visions. Here, we interview futuristic leaders who share their deep industry knowledge and business experience with you, ensuring you have your finger on the pulse and your eyes wide open. My name is Nathaniel Schooler, and I am your host today. Well, today I am privileged to be joined by Dudley Neville Spencer, and he is head of strategy at Live and Breathe and founder of the Virtual Influencer Agency. So we're going to be talking about virtual influencers and their application in B2B as well, which is very, very interesting. So welcome, Dudley. Thanks for joining me.
Thank you for having me. Nice to be here.
Super.
As in nice to be in a shed in my garden.
Well, I'm in a very warm room myself as well. And I know you had to turn off your aircon, right? And I had to shut the door. Yeah. So, well, we'll get there. It should be a very interesting conversation, actually, because I'm really interested in virtual influencers. And I think before you know, we kind of dig into that, I think it'd be good for people to know what on earth a virtual influencer is.
Yeah. Okay. Well, there are three kinds. Effectively, it's a computer-generated image character. So like a typical influencer, this is a character with a life and a backstory and a narrative, but it's something which is made and designed. Now at the moment, they kind of cross over into these three different areas. You can have a traditional customer service representative. So ANZ Bank, for example, in Australia, has what seems to be a living, breathing customer service representative called Jamie. But that kind of character is very single channel, answers questions, just helps you as a customer service rep. Then you have what we call creator owned. So something like Little Michaela, who is a character with a backstory owned by and developed by a creator for the purposes of them making money by that character becoming famous or that character releasing music or making clothing, etc., and doing brand deals. And then you have what we call brand owned, which is what we tend to focus on. And brand owned is when you have a character that is owned by the brand for the purposes of having an emotional relationship with the consumer. So the consumer knows that it's owned by the brand, but it has a narrative, a backstory, a history, and of course it's made up much like a character in a film or on television.
Okay, super. That's really interesting. I've heard a lot about these virtual influencers over the past few years, and I know you're probably the first person to the market that I know of in the UK. You've been doing this for a long, long time, right?
Yeah, too early. I started, as usual, way too early, 5 years ago, but I could kind of see where everything was going. I started in influencer marketing in 2007, and I saw where that was going, which of course is now absolutely huge. And I see exactly the same trajectory for VIs, except faster, much, much faster. And that's really because the utility of a VI, in that you can figure out what the audience is and create a character specifically for that audience, that has a lot of utility behind it. And knowing how much brands love to be in control and want to create an emotional relationship now with consumers, that's always what they've wanted to do. And VIs and the technology behind them now allows you to do that. So I think it will take off very quickly.
Yeah, I mean, I think we were talking a little bit beforehand, you know, about the influencers, the virtual influencers that you guys are creating could actually, you know, be tailored to specific demographics, specific people who have certain likes and dislikes, personality traits that they have, and also that they warm to, because people love to talk to themselves, right? And a lot of the time.
Yeah, for sure. Don't we all love to do that? Well, this is where audience intelligence comes in. So audience intelligence, I think in your last podcast, you talked about the Forrester report on audience intelligence as probably the key growth area of data science as it's related to marketing. And audience intelligence is something which we very much focus on, using the audience tool as part of a bigger suite. We have a bigger suite of tools called Data Kinetics. And Data Kinetics, which audience actually sits right at the center of, we use that to figure out the audience for virtual influencer markets. And we also use it for all of our traditional strategy. So for Live and Breathe, for all of our traditional clients, whether they're food, alcohol, traditional retail, packaged consumer goods, and you know, these are some of the world's biggest companies, we use audience intelligence to figure out the consumer and to segment the consumer, but in a way which is related to how they're interconnected, as well as behavioral, as well as understanding what content they like, what language they respond to, what psychology they have. Now, all of that that we take to segment audiences for our traditional clients, FMCG clients, etc., we also use that in exactly the same way for creating a virtual influencer. So if a brand says to us, we want to appeal to Gen X or whatever it is, then we will go and scrape 100,000, 200,000 conversations of that specific person. Then from that, extract that, use audience intelligence and audience and our other tools to figure out the psychographics, what content they're responding to, etc., and then create a character that we know will appeal to that very specific audience. So it's interesting that you've got the technology in the middle and it can be applied in these two very, very different ways, traditional consumer marketing or creating a virtual influencer.
That's very, very interesting. Purely because, you know, we work with a number of influencers and it's interesting how they actually create their own audience. So just because of their personality type, they create their own and the topics obviously that they're talking about. And I find it very, very interesting that you can actually, in essence, manufacture one of these being a brand or an agency, right? Yeah. And yeah, I find that fascinating, actually, you know, really.
It's another level, isn't it?
Yeah.
And if you think about consumer brands, the goal or business to business brands, the goal is the same. It's to have an emotional relationship with your consumer. If you're a business, that might be somebody buying your enterprise services or your technology, but you want a relationship, an emotional relationship with them. If you're consumer packaged goods or FMCG, again, you want an emotional relationship. Now, previously, the only way to really do that was by either hiring an influencer or hiring a celebrity. But you know that that's being rented out, or you hire someone who in business to business marketing is highly regarded in that industry. But all those people are separate from your brand. They're not owned by your brand. So what VIs do is they enable the brand to say, actually, we're going to create something that you're going to love to have a relationship with, you know, we own, but it shows that we understand you. And it also allows you to inject into the narrative and the life cycle of that virtual influencer, your service or your product, to make the integration and the story much richer of how your product or service comes to life.
I find it very, very interesting, really. It's a completely different perspective on the whole influencer marketing kind of business. Yeah. I think it's probably actually a new category in itself. You know, influencer marketing is one thing, but virtual influencers and their application is another, right? Especially on B2B. So what do you think about using this in B2B? I mean, is it like a chatbot sort of thing? I mean, how would you use it?
Yeah, so for B2B, it's fascinating. I think whoever uses this in B2B is going to absolutely dominate. And it sounds weird, you know, if you're a massive technology company and you're trying to sell into, you know, chief technical officers or whatever, or let's say, you know, you're a large energy company and you're trying to get in front of key investment officers who affect your share price. Well, what does a virtual influencer have to do with that? Well, I've got a great example of how effective they can be. There was a client which we wanted to work with and we couldn't get hold of them. We've been trying to make a meeting for 9 months. So we have a virtual influencer who is the head of our public relations at Virtual Influencer Agency and for Live and Breathe Agency. And so this our PR, who's called Jerome, sent a video message to her on LinkedIn and she responded that night. She got the message and it went, oh my goodness, is this for real? Who are you? Oh yeah, I know Live and Breathe. I know what's going on. So just the
classic that kind
of response. Yeah, you know, and this person, you know, we tried for 9 months to get in contact with them. So if you're trying to do that for really difficult to get in front of people, then VIs work brilliantly. I mean, you think about it, you can send a video on your phone. If you've got the phone number, you can send them a message on LinkedIn. You can do a video blog for them. It gets their attention quickly.
Very much so. Very much so. Yeah, I like it. I like it. So can we delve a little bit deeper into the consumer segmentation and the role of social data within that?
Yeah, Yeah, for sure. And then I should also answer, you talked about chatbots, and I should answer that because that's another part of the technology.
Cool.
But for the consumer data side, the audience intelligence component of the consumer data is really about trying to enrich the segment or the consumer as much as possible. Now, traditional segmentation or persona work tended to work by surveys or some interviews, some focus groups, and you take that person and say, this is Bob, here's a video of them, they live in Norwich and they like to go to this pub and this is their favorite. Now, that's okay, but as machine learning and neural networking grew, it always appeared to me when we were doing survey work in the past that if you get a bunch of people in a focus group, the alpha always dominates. So that alpha person is the one who dominates the conversation, and humans being tribal, we tend to go along with what they say. So I always question whether you're actually getting really good intel when you're doing a focus group. When you're doing surveys, particular kinds of people respond to surveys. So again, you're getting very, very skewed information. So what we tend to do with data kinetics and audience is we will take all kinds of behavioral sets. So we might take a survey, we might take a focus group and use that as what we call ground truths. So use that as a way to direct the machine to find conversations, which we will then extract and then analyze. Because of course the trick with segmentation is finding enough people and getting enough of a big data set and then going into those individuals, but you've got to find the right people. It depends on who you find. So for us, the survey, the search, and the focus groups do nothing more than point us in the direction to find 10,000, 20, 50,000 individuals who we can then enrich. And then the segmentation of that, so we know they're a particular consumer of a particular type of product. So then that segmentation, that's real and it's beautiful. And that is very, very rich. And so that's the way we like to do it now. So you don't throw out survey and focus and search. That's just the beginning point. It's not the end point at all.
Got it. So, yeah, I mean, I think it'd be good if we can talk about the chatbots at the end, actually, because I don't think we'll forget that. So, I mean, because I want to stay sort of focused on the consumer behaviors. I wanted to sort of understand a bit more about what differences you've kind of seen, like pre-COVID to, you know, where we are now kind of thing. On the behaviors, have you sort of noticed any differences?
Yeah, huge. We did this study where we pulled a bunch of data on pre-COVID in December, then again right at the beginning of it in February, then at the end of March. And what we were trying to do is group people into what we call tribes. So we call our segments tribes, and the reason we call them tribes is because when people traditionally think of a normal segment or like persona, segment, audience, what we try and do is combine everything. So we'll use audience to give us psychographics, what's the behavior of this group. We use audience to provide us with interconnectedness. So the more interconnected people are, the more they tend to belong to the same tribe. And then we'll overlay interests, we'll overlay socioeconomics as well, but pretty much overlay everything so that you can then get this really rich data set. And the reason we call them tribes is because we've got all these interoperable data sets laying on top of each other to create our segmentation. So that's what we call tribes. Now, what we did with this COVID study was we tried to see how the behaviors and the psychology of individuals in the UK was changing. And from that, with the emotional resonance related to different conversations, so not sentiment, so sentiment's positive, negative, or neutral. What we use is emotional resonance, which is another AI tool, which gives you joy, sadness, happiness, disgust, or fear. Because sentiment analysis, we also think doesn't work very well because the machine tends to stick everything it doesn't know what to do with into neutral when it's not neutral. So it skews things. So we found out what the emotional resonance was of different subjects and conversations. And then the machine clustered for us five different groups. And those five tribes were the ones which were changing behavior the most significantly across these different timeline data points. And so we found fascinating things. I think one of the most interesting ones was, and importantly, are they going to continue? Are these behaviors going to continue? One of the key ones, everybody knows that we all looked to our local area and started to champion local businesses. And everyone's rah, 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 champion businesses. Now, what we've actually seen in the last 2 months is that's collapsed. So that behavior, which everyone's talked about, hasn't entrenched. It's fractured completely. And instead, what's happened in the last sort of 6 weeks is consumers are now focusing more on political tribes, country tribes. So it's almost like support for local when they really, really needed it was huge, but then it just dropped off a cliff. And that's a really interesting one, because what the machine's actually done for us there is it's picked the key behavior spike, which everybody talked about, local, local, local. But then because it's picked it, we can analyze if it's entrenched, grown, or disappeared. And that one in particular disappeared.
That's very interesting. Quite sad, really. I mean, I think it probably is an inconsistency in how they've handled customer relationships is how I would analyze that from where I'm sitting, in terms of, you know, you don't need to wear a mask, or they don't wear a mask, or they don't have the right distancing. There'll be many reasons. But I think for me, I think it's probably inconsistency and lack of funds as well. I mean, they probably just went out of business, so many of these local companies as well, you know.
I think it's that thing also, it's utility, isn't it? Utility always wins. If something becomes easier, so as home delivery services improved, then you just start to use what's the easiest and the simplest. And you can't get over how much utility always seems to win out.
Yeah.
I think that's one of the key reasons.
Yeah, I was thinking about that yesterday because I bought a coconut, right? And you know when you buy these coconuts, yeah? And you want to drink coconut water, yeah? But like, it's a nightmare. You got to crack it open and then you...
Hard work.
But this coconut was brilliant. It had everything. It had like some sort of bamboo stick that you stuck in one of the holes in the top, and it had a straw. And actually what they'd done is they'd cut all the way around the outside so you could just smash it and it would open really easy.
Fantastic.
And so it's exactly what Amazon have done, and it's exactly what all of these big companies have managed to do. They provide a consistent experience, which is easy. I mean, yeah, that's why they're in business, right? At the end of the day. But yeah, it's crazy, yeah. But that's very interesting. So where does the role of audience intelligence come in campaign planning and execution then? I mean, you sort of talked a bit around that, but
yeah. Well, it's two areas. It's right at the beginning. So what tends to happen with our big clients is they'll give us their personas and they'll say, okay, this is who we're trying to reach out to. And so what we will then do is we will use that as a guide to go out there and bring in a whole bunch of people that are similar to that persona. And then we use audience intelligence to enrich those personas and figure out what their behaviors and their psychology, their content resonance, figure out what it is they really like, and then also figure out their interconnectedness. So create a tribal map of where these personas fit in and link. And then from that, we can make an informed decision about the type of creative and campaigns and also channels that we should focus on. So it helps allocate resources in terms of channel, and then it helps figure out creative in terms of the tone you use. You know, if someone's neurotic, then you tend to appeal to them missing out. If someone's conscientious, you tend to appeal to the fact that what this product or service is going to do is going to benefit those around them. So just those insights on psychology are so incredibly helpful for the creatives when it comes up to creating a proposition and developing, you know, an above the line advert or content for social media or choosing the influencers to work with. That's right at the beginning we tend to do it, and then we track it. So then once the campaign's running, we'll then track it and see how things are responding and see if we need to do more audience intelligence to analyze if the way they're thinking and feeling is changing, and therefore the campaign needs to be changed. So we like to do that every 3 or 4 months.
Got it. Very interesting. It's very interesting when you start delving into, you know, the kind of magazines they like and the personality traits they have, and, you know, if advertising has an effect on certain types of people, and, you know, it's fascinating, really.
That's an interesting one. Also, buying mindset, which is a fantastic tool. You know, just before you make that final purchase decision, what is it that really motivated you? Check to see if your friends like it, or do you check to see if it's a cool brand that other people are following, or is it an ad which you, where does your buying mindset click in? Because again, we're tribal animals and we will only do something if we think that it's part of our tribe. So what's that signal which you need? And then of course you can create your advertising and your marketing to push that signal. So if you're only going to buy something, if your buying mindset is based around your friends and families, then the creative shows your friends and family enjoying it. Or if your buying mindset is brand related, so you only buy things if they're well known, then you say in the ad, well, my brand is like this, you know, well-known brand. So you just find all those triggers and then you just zone in on them.
Yeah, it's very interesting, really. You can geek right out on all this stuff. You can go so deep, can't you? And you know, as far as like changing the headlines and all sorts of different things, I find it fascinating, really. It's very, very interesting. So
yeah.
What about agencies versus consultancies?
Yeah, I mean, I almost feel like we, particularly at Live and Breathe, have become more like, we've almost become more like a, you know, more like a Capgemini, more like a, in that we're starting right at the beginning in terms of trying to understand the consumer and understand what the triggers and barriers are. So, you know, whereas consultancies tend to be, you know, very business focused and how does the business need to change? And of course, then from that, they're moving into traditional agency area of, okay, well, here are the channels you should use and the type of perhaps creative proposition. They're very much moving into that area. What we seem to be doing is moving into their area more, where we're trying to figure out where the consumer is and how they are changing and how they are moving and how their motivations are changing. Now, we've always done that in agency world, but with the new tools that we have, and particularly audience intelligence, we can do that in a really, really deep way. In half the stuff I read on McKinsey, particularly recently over COVID, I was thinking, yep, I gave that to my clients 2 months ago. I don't mean that to sound over the top, but it's true, because effectively machine learning has leveled the playing field. If you know how to use those tools properly, then you can get the information and the analysis much faster than ever before, and you don't need a huge network of a consultancy to go out there and do all those surveys. We can get it in a week and put it together in 10 days.
I think we're both
crossing over into each other's areas,
right? So you're getting more involved with the sorts of outcomes.
Yeah, the business, how the consumer is changing, and therefore how the business needs to change to leverage off of that.
So, do you want to talk about chatbots?
Yes. Okay, sure. So, you talked before about virtual influencers and how do they work in terms of communicating. So, the simplest way to do it is you can just have a person responding. Yep, just responding as that virtual influencer. And they obviously have to do that in character, or you can have groups of people doing it. But as chatbots and particularly natural language processing becomes more and more effective, what we are starting to do is create highly advanced chatbots which can carry on a majority of a conversation with a consumer. And of course, the advantage is they can do hundreds of conversations at once. Now, the issue is creating NLP, or let's just call it a chatbot. It's much more advanced than that, but creating it with a personality behind it. Now, there's a great company which we've been working with called Elsewhere to create personality-based NLP. And the way we're making that work is by, again, extracting thousands and thousands of conversations of that particular personality type, and then using those, what they call sentence fragments and sentence structures, to inform the machine so it knows how to speak within the personality that you've defined for your virtual influencer. Now, it's not perfect. In September, we were going to be presenting with Elsewhere one of our characters, which we were going to have live on stage at AdTech, and then have a marketing director kind of talk to them, but show them how we develop that personality and then demonstrate how that comes through in the language. But of course, that's not happening now, so we might end up doing it remotely. But that's the real future of this. And I reckon probably another 6 months to 9 months. It works at the moment, but it's just hard to do. Another 6 months to 9 months, it will get easier and easier and easier. And that's a beautiful, that's a great growth area.
Yeah, very much so. I think, I went to Wimbledon. IBM took me to the Wimbledon tour around the basement. And at that point in time, you know, they had Watson, and they were like, well, look, you can talk to Watson and you can ask Watson questions. And what I found very interesting is they had two different personas. They had the tennis geek expert, right, which was how to engage with Watson as, you know, me being a tennis geek, which I'm not, or the general public. And it was very interesting in how, you know, that just literally just pulled up on the screen the information that you needed to find, right? So basically, it's just bridging that gap, isn't it, between the kind of just talking, the chat, and actually having a virtual face and a personality and everything. And then you can go and pick them, much like you can with Siri, and you can pick a male voice or a female voice or whatever, right?
Yeah. Yeah, and you know, you hit the nail on the head then. And, you know, Watson have done a lot of work on this. What you experienced is effectively what's available now. You can either create something which has deep knowledge in one particular area as a personality, or something which just has kind of banal chat. What we're trying to do in the area of where it's going to get incredibly exciting is where we can have that personality. You know, how is this person open or they're not open? So an open person is going to respond to you if you say, oh, where did you get that dress? You know, to their YouTube VI or the Instagram VI. And if they're, you know, 80% open on like an ocean psychographic scale, they're going to say, oh, well, I got it here. And, you know, it's a really nice material. If they're closed, they're going to say, oh, I don't know, I just got it from a shop. Now, getting that kind of personality to come through, that's the Holy Grail. And that's what we're doing lots of work on. And that's really exciting.
So are there, so when it comes to people, right, would most people like to talk to someone who is like them, or would some people like to talk to people who are not like them? Like, how does that work? Have you thought about that a lot? Or
yeah, there's loads of different psychological papers on that. Look, in the end, you want to see, it depends what you're having a conversation for. Is it for entertainment, or is it to make you feel good? You know, what's the reason? Now, entertainment wise, of course, you will look at characters that are nothing like you, and you will follow their life and look at their life for pure entertainment. However, when it comes to engagement, then yeah, you want someone like you. It's all of these word clues, cues, and subtle subject topics and inferences which make you feel that person is like you, that create a bond. So the way you respond as a VI determines whether or not that person is going to form an emotional bond with you or not. So effectively, yeah, it's those cues are extremely important, and the language that you use.
It's a great subject. I've been doing a little studying around this over the years, and I was interested. There was a lot of work around the mental health area with like curing like PTSD and stuff, and how they created like a robot chat person to discuss their problems. And actually, those people who would not normally engage with a person would tell a chatbot anything. Like, you wouldn't believe it. I think we've got a very interesting future. The next 5-10 years, even sooner, are actually quite exciting. If we can bridge this gap, you know, within the healthcare space, I think it's going to be very interesting. Really,
what you talked about is one of the first reasons I got involved in this. You know, it was DARPA in the States, which is basically the Advanced Defense Association in America. And yeah, what they had a problem with was soldiers suffering PTSD and not opening up to their psychologists, not telling them what the real problem was. So they'd go back and back and back, and they wouldn't open up. Why wouldn't they open up? Because it's a human who they are worried is going to judge them. So they don't say. Yeah, once they found out it was a machine, they were happy because they knew they weren't going to be judged. So it enabled them to have a more emotional conversation with a machine than a human, which sounds so counterintuitive. But then when you understand, you know, like you just said, like we are tribal animals and we don't want to feel like we're not fitting in or be judged, then it suddenly makes a whole lot of sense. And that's effectively what we want to take onto Instagram and YouTube, is exactly that.
Fantastic. And also, you know, on your LinkedIn, you talk about augmented reality, virtual reality, and these development areas, right? Yeah. So, I mean, I think from where I'm sitting, I think perhaps augmented reality is going to be faster than virtual reality, but I don't know right now. I think things are very difficult at the moment, aren't they? So it's a tricky one to gauge that market.
Well, you know what's really interesting there is mixed reality. That again, probably a little bit too early for this, as always.
Yeah.
But mixed reality is overlaying. If you've got eyewear on, you can see the world around you. And there's some great mixed reality eyewear out there, which look like normal glasses. Some of them are tethered, some of them are attached to your phone. Now, Facebook and Apple are spending billions on this. And what they're creating is eyewear where you walk around in the street and the virtual world is overlaid onto the real world. Now, the future of that is, of course, you're walking down a street and out pops the virtual influencer of the bike store to tell you that there's an offer in. Do you want to come in and, you know, take advantage of it, or some special meal deal, or just, you know, that's in a very simple way of thinking about it. But that mixed reality world is a world which we think is just going to get bigger and bigger and bigger. And who are you going to engage with in that mixed reality world? Virtual influencers. So we see it in 10 years time, every brand in the world will need to have a VI, and that VI will be having conversations with consumers, multiple consumers at once, one-on-one relationships and conversations. And that's where we think the real growth will get. That's when it will really, really kick in. We're a way away from that, but you know, I don't know if you've seen Magic Leap or if you've played with Nreal glasses. Apple's aren't released yet. Facebook's aren't released yet, but they're all doing them.
I've seen these things. Yeah, and I've talked to a few people in that sort of new space, right? And I think it's very interesting. So, you know, providing we stay in touch with our audiences and we keep an eye on what's going on, I think that area has got masses of potential, because, you know, with the need to reduce costs as well. Mm-hmm. I think these things are absolutely necessary. I mean, if you think about, like, for example, you know, going to the airport and doing your EasyJet flight, you have to print off your own boarding pass and then blah, blah, blah. So, you know, moving forwards, people are going to be replaced completely and displaced into other jobs. Yeah. And, you know, I've got an interesting episode in the making around jobs. And I think that what you've just talked about really is actually the new wave of job creation, actually.
Yeah.
Really.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. If you look at advertisements for Python programmers, augmented reality creatives, I mean, they're through the roof. You can't get, you know, they can charge thousands and thousands and thousands a week, and you can't get them. And that's because everybody's going to need these characters, you know, so that's a huge area. I mean, I had a family friend talk to us the other day about what to get his kid into, and I just said, just get him into Python now, right now, manipulating data sets. Or get them into some augmented reality software, because I don't even feel like we've started down that path yet. And we're going to need millions of people that are skilled in this area, because it's going to affect every single industry.
Yeah, I agree completely. I think it's very interesting, this whole notion of, you know, giving people what they want. The only way to do that is to listen to them and then adjust accordingly. And virtual influencers have the capability to do that, right? Because in essence, what you're doing is, so I'm going to, the create one, right? You're basically listening to all the conversations. You're also listening to and looking at the existing audiences of these brands. And then you're saying, oh, okay, so we need to build one in this area for this brand with this personality, because we know that X amount of their audience are very vocal and we know they will engage with that particular influencer. Yep. And then you build 1, 2, 3, or maybe 20 different personalities based upon the personalities in the biggest sizes in the beginning, going down to the niche one at the end, which, you know, perhaps doesn't really talk much. And then you allocate resources, right, to each one, which is in essence a person who goes in and adjusts the messages and the code and whatever, right?
We actually have a brief right now where they've said, yeah, we think we need 4 or 5. I'm like, great, okay, no problem. So that would be fascinating if that came off, but it will. That is how it will work. And also the machinery to create this is getting easier and simpler. You know, 5 years ago, we needed like a £13,000 film level CGI computer to make it happen. Now You can use a computer in the cloud with software that is practically free to create CGI characters.
Fascinating.
Yeah, and that's why lots of kids are getting into it. It used to be like 55-year-old computer programmers and old film CGI designers, and now it's like 19, 20-year-olds in Berlin and Latvia.
Brilliant. Well, that has been a really interesting conversation, Dudley, and I can't thank you enough. Absolutely brilliant. So
thank you.
So how do people find you?
If you go to liveandbreathe.co.uk or virtualinfluencer.agency, either of those, and I'm at D Neville Spencer on Instagram and Twitter, and also on LinkedIn.
Super. Well,
thank you very much, Daniel. Really enjoyed talking to you. That was a lot of fun, and thanks for being so interested in all of it, and particularly in pushing the future, you know. Bring it on.
Yeah, definitely. Thanks for listening. Please make sure you share this episode with your friends and business connections too, and don't forget to drop us a review wherever you listen. Thank you.